Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That whole description was like, you have to go for the glories of Lyme, or the village, or the cliffs, or the gravelly shore. And it's like, Austin, hon, I wish you got the chance to get out more.
Rusty Quill presents Enthusiasm.
Hello, friends, fans, and everybody else. Welcome to Enthusiasm. I'm your host, Helen Gould, one of the best Rusty Quillers. This is our show where various members of the RQ crew get together, kick back, and chat about a few of our favourite things. Today on the agenda, we're talking about Jane Austen.
Woo!
And I am delighted. Yes, woo! Woo for Austen. I am delighted to be joined by...
Lydia Nicholas. Oh, wait, I'm doing it like a Rusty Quill gaming thing where I assume everyone knows who I am. No, sorry, I am Lydia. I remain Lydia Nicholas. You may know me from Rusty Quill Gaming and Magnus sometimes. I stab things.
Yeah, that's the character trope.
I'm Maddie Searle. I am the editor on Stella Firma and mysterious upcoming things that will be made known soon.
Ooh. I think they'll probably be known by the... Because this is Patreon only, they probably already know about it by the time this has come out. Unless it's something I don't even know about.
No, this is something that... No, this is inexplicable. So yes, you do definitely know about it.
The thing
it.
I definitely know about.
Me and Sasha making eye contact through the camera like, no idea.
When you said inexplicable, I was like, I thought that was just a descriptor.
Sorry, and Sasha, who are you?
Oh, hi, yes, I'm Sasha Sienna. I voice Georgie Barker on the Magnus Archives, and I'm kind of a general Rusty Quill Towers haunts person, just doing things, games designing things, and occasionally get pulled in to do other things.
We all know who each other are now. So, Jane Austen. To my knowledge, there are 6 main Jane Austen novels out there. We have, of course, Pride and Prejudice, which is the one with Mr. Darcy. We have Sense and Sensibility, which Sense and Sensibility is...
the boring version of Pride and Prejudice.
That's the one with Mr. Wickham, isn't it?
No, it's
no,
Willoughby.
Pride and Prejudice is the one with Mr. Wickham. This one's Willoughby. Sense and Sensibility is the one with Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman and Kate Winslet in the 1995 adaptation.
Yes.
The cool things you're remembering about Sense and Sensibility actually are the subplots of Pride and Prejudice. And this is not the first time I've seen that happen.
Well, she shouldn't have titled them so similarly. So Sense and Sensibility is the one where they're the poor women because their older half-brother got all the money.
Yeah.
And
then they go to live in a cottage.
Yes, that's the one. Oh, that's the one where Hugh Grant turns up, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Edward Ferris.
Okay. Then there's Emma, who is the meddling lady who keeps trying to set everyone up and actually isn't very good at it.
Yeah.
She has very cool clothes and they go to a 90s high school.
Yes.
That's
I
the
love
one.
The tartan skirts.
Yeah. I mean, my favourite thing about Emma is the AI program to choose an outfit. I really think that was
ahead of
its
my
time.
Word. I was so into the idea of that as a child.
Yeah, yeah.
It was
I
amazing.
Thought that was going to be the future.
Yeah.
I honestly thought, like, oh, come the year 2000, we'll all have those.
Yeah.
We did not.
Should we be clear that we're not actually talking about the original Emma just then?
I do feel like from context.
Yeah, I think the weirdest thing about the original Emma is that Paul Rudd hasn't aged.
Yes.
He's immortal.
Since the original publishing, which is quite a while ago now.
Honestly believable.
We are talking... Is it Clueless?
Yeah.
Is that
we're
Clueless?
Talking about Clueless. Yeah.
Clueless okay. is the only adaptation of Emma that I will... I think it's the only one that's worth watching. It is? I remember being bored by one once. But the problem is that it's the one that makes the age gap reasonable, whereas so many other... Like, the age gap in the book is gross. Like, they make a point about that he knew her as a baby.
Well, I have strong opinions about this.
Oh.
Okay, yes, no, it is gross that he knew her when she was a baby, but also, like, the age gap in Regency times was very, very different. Like, the context was very, very different.
Hmm.
And I think that you could argue that a college person going out with someone who is 15, who is also his stepsister, is also very questionable. I don't think there's that much of a difference contextually, which is why I think it's such a good adaptation.
So, the next 3 are the lesser known ones, I think, right? So then there's Persuasion, which is the one where...
Persuasion is my favourite too. I saw Maddie like smile. Yes,
I didn't want to interrupt, but I just clasped my hands in a wistful way because I love it.
Yeah. So that was somewhat like her long lost, like he proposed and she was forced to say no, I seem to remember. And then he went away to the Navy.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then he came back and then they have another go.
Yep. They do have another go. Yep.
It's the most beautiful letter.
Yes, it is. It's so pretty and it's so feminist.
Mansfield Park is the one that tries to tackle slavery a bit, I think.
I've kind of steered clear of that one and never managed to actually read it.
I've never read it either.
I always confuse Mansfield Park with Gosford Park, which is a completely different period piece. And then there's Northanger Abbey, which is the funniest one, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And that's the one with the lady who is obsessed with gothic romances.
Yeah.
Yes.
I really want to make a version where it's basically the main character is obsessed with not Twilight, but something very like Twilight.
Mm. And then that is the correct adaptation choice. Yeah. That is absolutely the, like, yeah, because someone that's obsessed with horror has a completely different vibe now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, that's very true. So, I like to think I've got a star on these summaries.
I think you would totally have passed the Austen module of my literature degree, which is the last time that I read most of these.
Are we talking about the others or not?
Tell us about the others, Sasha.
The Juvenalia.
Yeah, well, there's the Juvenalia, but then there's also some later published works which were published posthumously, I don't know which It is posthumous. I mean, there's Lady Susan, which is a short story, which may or may not be part of the Juvenalia, as far as I'm aware. There is a bit of debate around that. And that is one of my very favourite Austen pieces, which is a short story about a woman who's like a very wealthy, well, formerly very wealthy, now pretty poor, really flirty society lady who's going around making a nuisance of herself and getting into scandals. And then there are the unfinished novels, Sanditon and the Waltons, which, well, they are unfinished. They are short little snippets. But I would really like to be able to talk about Lady Susan because I love it.
I wish that you'd given a reading list before, because I think I vaguely remember reading the Sanditon bit, but I do not remember Lady Susan.
It's okay. We don't have to talk about it. I'm actually recording another podcast about Lady Susan this weekend, so I can hold it in.
There's so much Austen coming out of your pores.
I seem to be making somewhat of a semi-career of just, like, being weirdly into Jane Austen.
It's not weird.
So I think I'll do what I did with the Buffy and with the horror episodes and ask, like, how did we all, like, first encounter Jane Austen? What got us hooked, as it were? Because for me, it was my mum. She was super into it. She and I both have a love of period dramas, and I still haven't forgiven her for spoiling Jane Eyre for me. Because we're watching a BBC adaptation of it, and there was like a shot where there was like a red scarf coming out of the tower.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And I was so fascinated. I was like, oh my gosh, what could that be? And my mum's like, oh yeah.
And she answered?
It's the wife.
Oh my God.
Oh.
And I was like, mother!
So did you start watching adaptations or reading the books? Like, which did she share with you or both?
Definitely the films. I didn't have the books until I was in university, I think.
And minor sidebar, Toby Stevens in that Jane Eyre adaptation is absolutely awesome and very sexy.
Well then, Maddie, how did you get into it?
I was similar. It was my grandmother, who I called Gigi because it was like a childhood nickname that stuck. She was an English teacher and she loved Jane Austen and Shakespeare and all these kinds of things, and showed me lots of movie adaptations and TV adaptations, things like that. And it was basically like I was getting sneaky English lessons and not even knowing it and just absolutely loving it, because it was just watching films with my granny. So it was really lovely.
I remember trying to read the books quite young, because that was the sort of thing you were supposed to do, and hating them because it was like there's all these women and they don't do anything. And I would really like to go back to all the magicians and dragony stuff, please. I mean, I'll put up with sometimes they'll have like ladies in, but they don't have to feature much and I don't have to care about their emotional lives, because when I was young, pretty much everything that you would read was like men do things, women feel things. And I remember at sixth form, we had Persuasion as a set text. And the teacher that we had was like a feminist, anti-racist activist in Australia who had taken time off from activism to go live somewhere else and teach in a private school, because I was on like a scholarship at that sixth form. And so we had this tiny, tiny class and this incredibly enthusiastic teacher who would bring politics into every line of that book and would talk to us about what it was about, relationships and stuff. And so I have a copy that is just filled with notes that are so like child doing their A-levels. So I'm like underlining stuff and it's like, he is angry, but it's not clear. And the sort of stuff where, like, I'm reading it now and I'm like, yes, duh. So much of that. And yeah, I remember it's like the letter that he writes at the end where she says, like, there's this massive reversing of, like, in so many of the other books, it's like the men do things and they're allowed to speak and they get opinions and the women have to, like, subtly negotiate through these tiny cracks to get any control over their lives and futures. And there's just like this thing of she's taken an action and he like is silent and sort of petitioning her and she gets this ultimate choice. And this was this huge thing. And I just remember going through it. Like I don't know if like Sasha's processing all of this and being like, I have a million opinions of your relatively basic take. And I'm sure.
No.
But like reading through it again, I still think it's an incredible book, but I have not, I still find most of the others like impossible and irritating. Genuinely, I can enjoy the adaptations, but Like, they have their own value and they have, I love the humour and I love the writing and the language, but like Persuasion is one where it feels like it could be possible. And apart from how she jumps off the steps at Lime, and that, like, that's ridiculous. Like, why she jumps? It's just like, why would you bunks her? Anyway, that was like my intro. And then I had to study the others at university and I still, they're funny, right? I love the humour,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of the time I'm going through and I'm like, this, it's all about people's feelings and I don't really understand people's feelings. So like, they're playing a game that I don't, the rules are a mystery. That's it. I will be quiet now and hear Sasha's intro to Austin.
Actually, my eyes were lighting up when you were talking about how you would underline all your books during A-levels, because the way that I got into Jane Austen was I actually found a book in my house. I don't know where it came from. It wasn't either of my parents, but it was clearly someone else's old A-level text of Pride and Prejudice with all their annotations. And I was about 13 or 14 at this point and loved to read. But to be honest, like English lessons when you did like literary analysis in air quotes at like age 12 had left me desperately bored. And this was the first time that I'd read a book where you could actually see some analysis of it in real time. And it blew my mind. I loved that book so much. And I was already like, was in a bit of a classic literature phase anyway. I just was such an eye-opener. I just fell so hard for it. And I just devoured the rest of the books. Absolutely loved it. But I loved all like that, like classic literature that you would read as a teen, you know, that kind of stereotypical stuff. And then it wasn't till I was in maybe my first or second year at university and I was talking to a man who was doing English literature undergrad and he was a self-identified feminist and he mentioned Jane Austen and I was like, oh yeah, I love Jane Austen. And he was like, yeah, no, it's just, I don't think it should be studied. Like he was real, I don't know if he said, I don't think it should be studied, but he was like, oh, it's just pointless. Like, that I may be putting words in his mouth there, but he was basically saying like all these wars and big events, historical, important political events were going on. And she's just writing about like women getting married. Like she's just writing about day-to-day stuff. And it just, ew. Oh my God. You know, that gif of Mrs. White, like flames on the side of my face from the Clue movie. Yeah. I just like got this rage. And it was like, and I just went on this massive rant about how actually A, the stuff that's happening day to day is still, does still matter. B, this was women's real life. And actually there is plenty going on in the books. And I'm so sorry if you don't have the subtlety of thought to tell that people are still doing things, even if they're not telling you. And then yes! A man went to a war and killed a person. Like, you know, they are still events. They are still important. And also, like, it's not just about the romance, because you can't forget that at this time, a woman's marriage was her, her economic survival.
Yeah.
It is not just about people's feelings. Not that there is anything wrong about people's feelings. That can also be incredibly valuable and definitely worth studying. But it is also of material concern what's happening here. And if you can't pay attention to that stuff, then that's on you, not on Jane Austen. Yeah. Like, yes, we should still be studying her. And I'm sorry that nobody's going to war in this book. Also, there are people going to war in this book. You just have to look closely to see what it's... Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm getting too agitated. I'm moving around. And I hope none of these listeners are that particular male literature student from my second year of university. So
I hope that they are and that they, like... come to Austin, as it were.
Yeah.
The fact that I say that about what 13-year-old me thought when she was trying to read these things.
Oh, goodness, no, I know.
That's the thing, is that I then grew up slightly and realised those were important. It was just like, there was such a clash when I was a kid that it was like, this is what you should be interested in at exactly that same stereotypical age.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, I want to read Dickens, where like there's little thieves and they do stuff. And it's like, no, you know what? It's just as important. It's just, it genuinely does take more of a subtlety of thought. I think there's a lot of people that can really enjoy them at whatever age and whatever level. There is, there's a subtlety of thought to realizing how serious it is. Like, she's taking the silliness of life seriously, because like the silliest one, who is Lydia, by being silly, and they literally call her a silly girl, like she potentially destroys lives, right?
Yeah.
What seems trivial is absolutely not. ever.
That's such a good way of putting it. It's like she takes the silliness of life seriously. I really love that. And yeah, so that's why my eyes were lighting up while you were talking, because it mirrored how I came to it.
Yeah,
very nicely, I thought.
In a weird way, that's why I actually find Pride and Prejudice and a couple of the others quite hard, is someone, I can't even remember who, commented once when I was talking about Pride and Prejudice about how it was a fantasy. And it's one of those things that really sticks with you, because she said something like, you don't marry a Lizzie. Like, Darcy wouldn't marry a Lizzie. She maybe gets to be that, like, she's the affair, right? Like, and that's the reality. It, when you look at it, and you, especially in the adaptation where he's got that chonky house. and it's like, she doesn't have anything to recommend her except her personality and herself. And it's wonderful how it happens in the book. But there's, I think, almost hearing I just remember someone's commentary kind of like, he wouldn't feel that he has the freedom to do that because he's got so many other, like, there's the responsibilities to marry the right person, to keep the line and keep everything. Like, it's not a thing that would really happen. I find it quite hard now watching it. I mean, like, it's someone's idea of what would be nice to happen. Because she shows their lives being destroyed by silliness, and then she saves it in a way that is, you know, I don't know, when so much of the rest is really plausible. Like, it's fine for a novel. Like, I read stuff with magic in. It's cool. that's not to say it's a bad book. It's just, I don't know. I remember that really ruined the book for me, reading it, like, someone saying that and, it feeling then like a fix-it fic.
I feel like, actually, I've heard that criticism as well. And I feel like, first of all, again, with my soapbox,
please fix it
for
me.
Criticism, like, oh, it's just not realistic, only ever gets applied to romance novels written by women.
Yep.
And it's like, no, of course, these are supposed to be unusual events. Mm. That is why we are writing a fucking novel about them. Mm. then they're supposed to be not just every single day this happens. But I think that that would be a more cutting criticism for me if the book itself did not treat this as completely out of the ordinary.
Mm.
Because obviously, no, the vast majority of cases, that wouldn't have happened, but out of the ordinary things did still happen in Regency times. Not everybody lived their lives in one way. And this is very much treated as like, this is a wild decision for him to have made.
Yeah.
His family are like, what are you doing? Mm. But he is saying he's going to do it anyway. And I don't think that that was a fix it. I think that this is very much a book about a man who seems like the sort of person who would have done the normal honor of the family, protect the line thing.
Mm.
But actually, all the way through, he is not that man.
Yeah.
He is somebody else. And so I think it doesn't seem like a fix it fic, because it's not a fix it. It's baked into the book. That is what the story is. But also, I do think that the book treats it as very notable.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, I'm reading books for things to be a bit notable.
I get that. It's, and yeah, like I say, I read things with magic in. And there's...
Oh, but that's part of what, like, that's part of the deal, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're reading...
I think it's that, yeah, it's the internal consistency thing with some of her book. Like, but this is the sort of thing that I do criticise in, say, Dickens, where there's the incredible coincidences. Like, oh no, it turns out that so-and-so is also his uncle, who was long lost at sea. Like, we get that that is a thing in Dickens, and that is also definitely a thing in continually through Austen, because they're constantly re-meeting the same, like, three people. Like, oh, it turns out that my ex is just going to live up the road because he's connected by marriage to someone that... But that's fine. I'm fine with that. I think you have fixed my sadness about Pride and Prejudice. So thank you, Sasha.
Oh, glad. That is my main aim in life.
Yay!
I think it's also interesting to kind of, because from a modern perspective, a lot of the kind of stories that I like are like, smash the system, get rid of all the old stuff, get it all out there. Whereas Jane Austen is much like, we're in a system. Mm. This is just how it is. We have to work with it. We can't like completely destroy it. We have to like sneak our way through and find the best outcome in this very flawed system, which I find very interesting.
Mm.
It is about living in a broken world and a lot of it. Like they can't do things that they want to.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... Lockdown has made me understand Jane Austen a lot better.
Like, oh, yes.
I absolutely cannot see people. There's all the like, oh, it's not like I have a chaperone, but I can't see the people I want to.
Mm.
Like, all the same. And so I literally, the whole take a turn around the room sounds absurd. Like I remember like rewatching that a while ago and being like, what absolute eejits. How this must be satirical. This must be one of her funny bits. And now, yep, lockdown, I'm like, I'm just going to walk around the garden for a change of scene. Mm-hmm.
My mum has a Fitbit and sometimes she just waltzes through the house like, I'm doing my steps.
I think that particular bit about let's take a turn about the room, I think that bit is satirical.
Well, she's being funny about it, but the idea that that is a ridiculous thing to do always.
Yeah.
Like, she's being ridiculous in that moment because she's trying to do something. Yeah. But the idea that you would...
But it certainly isn't so out of line with the rest of the book that you're like, that would never happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, yes, very much like, oh, I think I might take a walk to the kitchen.
Yeah.
I think for me, the bit that I'm now connecting more to with lockdown is just the... My imagination is like doing really weird things at the minute because I don't have much outside stimulation. Like I haven't been seeing people to like talk about things and discuss things and say what ifs. And so to me, it seems the number of like times when people are just like daydreaming or thinking by themselves or sitting under a tree for hours, which before I was like, I can't, you have to have something with you. I can't just stare into space for hours. And now I'm just like, probably could now, actually, if I've got nothing else to occupy my mind. I'll just be like, what if this happened? Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, it's very strange.
Mm.
I think one of the things about Austen's books is they can, when you are, as I say, the kind of person that reads things that are either smash the system or smash the magic tower, or like they feel small, but that's fine because it is, it's also a delighting in the smallness of real life and existing and the skill that it takes to navigate those things. In Persuasion, there's so much about how Anne is practical and the fact that she gets to show that or just be useful and find her life has shrunk so much even compared to other people within that system, but she still finds ways to survive and to daydream and to help people.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like my life has shrunk.
Yeah.
And so my imagination is so much more active now in order to try and like push those boundaries to where I think that they used to be.
Yeah.
But we're getting a little bit maudlin, I think. Shall we talk about something very, very funny?
Sure.
Go for it.
Shall we talk a little bit about... I really do want to talk about Northanger Abbey.
Yeah.
I think it's my favourite out of all of them, just because, for one thing, it's hilarious that she's just walking around a house thinking, ooh, ghosts! And for another... I didn't realise how risque the books that she was reading actually were. I think it was
Sasha. Have you read The Monk?
No.
Oh, but my word. It's got serious trigger warnings, but it is very, very risque.
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, so like when John Thorpe is, you know, so she's reading Mysteries of Udolpho, and that's what like her friend Isabella is suggesting she reads as well, like or is reading along with her. And she's loving that. And that one is pretty risque. And then John Thorpe, who's like the dickhead guy, he suggests to her that she reads The Monk and says that that's what he's reading. And that's how you know, like that's one of the many clues that he's just a dickhead. Like he's got no clue about what is and isn't appropriate. He's got this kind of like brash modernity about him in a way that is very censured. And yeah, that like the whole fact that he's recommending The Monk to her is such a telling character point because, my word, that's an explicit book for a Regency era.
Yeah, I'm reading some of the plot summary. Oh, my. Oh, my gosh, burnt death.
I would listen to a podcast that is just Helen reacts to plot summaries
to Wikipedia.
Risque Regency era novels.
The thing that really sticks with me as well in Northanger Abbey is the scene where I think she's with John and he like they're just riding off in his chariot really fast with this horse straight past the people she actually wants to like just the idea of her just going woo and then just like watching her just go by I think it's just so funny.
I can just really imagine him as like this really dickish dude bro in like a really fancy sports car, just like zooming past the people in like the very ordinary Volkswagen or something. She's like, I want to talk to the people in the Volkswagen, please.
What are the rest of your, like, what are your favourites? Because Northanger Abbey is mine. What about you? I mean, Sasha, you already said Lady Susan.
So Lady Susan is one of my favourites. I always tell people that my favourite of the novels is Northanger Abbey because I think it's the most underrated. And also it's the most, like, when I was 15 and reading it, I was like, this is me! This is a book about me! And it was a book about me. But also I really hate to say that my actual favourite might be Pride and Prejudice because it's a very basic thing to say.
Nothing here is basic.
Yeah, my favourites are Northanger Abbey and Lady Susan, for sure. Yeah.
I've read Jane Austen books you've never heard of.
Well, it's just everyone's favourite is Pride and Prejudice. And also, Theresa May said that Pride and Prejudice would be her book on Desert Island Discs, and now I don't want to say that it would be mine. Oof. Lest people think that I have something in common with Theresa May. Lest I actually do have something in common with Theresa May, which would be worse.
She probably likes it for different reasons. She likes it for basic reasons. You like it for good reasons.
Yeah.
While also acknowledging that the basic reasons are also valid, because things can just be good.
Yes.
It's complicated.
Thank you.
How about you, Maddie?
I've just been trying to think, and I think I'm very much like, Pride and Prejudice is my favourite, like, classic romance one, but then Persuasion is my favourite, like, very low-key and very sort of heartfelt and almost kind of subversive one, and then Northanger Abbey is my favourite, like, funny one. And so I'm just basically like, they're all my favourites for different reasons, and I am like Sense and Sensibility for, well, mainly for the Emma Thompson adaptation, just because it's so pretty.
It's so good.
I think with Pride and Prejudice, not Pride and Prejudice, with Persuasion, there are such moments of, I think it's because you say understated or like subversive, and it is those things, but it's also that there are just like the moments where she's thinking about him and thinking about what she's lost, where like there are points where it's like there's so much emotion that if it was an adaptation, and I have never seen an adaptation actually, if it was an adaptation I would need to pause it, and with this I often have to put the book down and be like, cup of tea, so much emotion. Oh, I feel it in my core. And then, like, read again. Like, it is, and oh, like, Wentworth is just so sexy. He's just so sexy.
Yes, he is. There is an adaptation that's the one I watched before I read it, which I really like, which is a BBC one. Kind of, I think it was sort of towards the end of the sort of 90s period drama run. And it's Amanda Root and Kieran Hines in the main roles. And it's just absolutely brilliant. And of course, like, all the minor characters are brilliantly cast and hilarious. Like, Mary, her sister, is completely wonderfully awful. And Simon Russell Beale is just kind of very sweet, but kind of useless as her husband. And yeah, it's just like an all-star, like, British character actor version, and also it's just incredibly, like, quiet and beautiful, and has only the most gentle piano accompaniment soundtrack, and like they really like allow the moments of silence and the, like, the beautiful kind of bleak shorelines and woods and forests.
They are so into lime, like, the that whole description is like, you have to go for the glories of lime, oh, the village, oh, the cliffs, oh, the gravelly shore. And it's like, Austin, hon, I wish you got the chance to get out more. Like,
yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot better seaside resorts than lime, sorry to say.
Oh, she hated, like, the big ones. You know, she was all about that, like, tiny little beachside where no one else is going. And it's like, well, there's probably a reason why no one else is going there. But, you know, like, she hated, like, the Brighton kind of places. She thought it was the worst place in the world. Wish you could see it now, Jane.
I do want to say that, like, one of the things that really endears me towards, like, all fiction of this era, but of this era, is the very outlandish ways that they all speak to each other, where someone is like, oh, they are the most kind and generous person in the entire world, and, you know, you can stab me if you think differently. That, do you know what I mean? Like, the overstatements is just something that I love to read, because There's a part of me that's like, they don't really mean that. No one can really mean that. But on the other hand, maybe they do, because they only knew like 20 people.
Yeah. And they are like, the connection with an ex, you know, the oh, we have the pleasure of a connection with the Duchess. Really? I've just noticed, sorry, I could bring it up later, but I did make notes on Pride and Prejudice adaptation, and I've just seen them in front of me. But I gave up because all they are is Darcy is naked in the bath. Oh my. Darcy's hair is wet. Ooh. There, oh, Darcy again on a horse. God, oh, the pond. He gets wet so much. Oh, fencing scene. Sweaty again.
Fencing.
Pond. underlined.
This is the best review of 1995 Pride and Prejudice I have ever heard in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I got. I've also put, I hate Jane a few times. That's basically it. Those are the comments that I had.
In the adaptations, what I really love is the subtleties of everything, how someone can say something that to me, I'd be like, oh, okay. But to someone else, it's like, oh, how dare, and like faints.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like the concept of cutting someone.
Yeah, I was really thinking about the moment in Emma where she says a really cutting thing to, I can't remember the lady's name. The sort of busybody lady.
Miss Bates.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. She just absolutely devastates her, and it's like the most horrible thing that ever happens in that book. And it's just like this one sentence, and I'm like, whoa.
It's just like a knife in the heart every time you read it.
And I think it's what you were saying earlier about how it's all the small things, because you're in that world of small things, it's also small things that can have such an impact. And I really love being sucked into that.
Mm.
Because, like, me as a person, I'm pretty confident. It's not that easy to insult me, really. But there's something about the adaptations of these things that really just makes me think, oh, I totally understand how awful that is.
I think you're right about the fact that it's these lives are so constrained.
Mm.
And every little misstep is... the stakes are genuinely high, and that does get repeated to you over and over again. Like, yeah. Obviously there's the Lydia and Kitty being silly and then potentially endangering everyone's futures, but that kind of happens over and over again, like in Emma, where she advises her protege rolling with the homies to date the wrong person when she should obviously be with a stoner skateboarder. It's just they don't, it's so, I remember in the actual book, like, I can't remember who calls her up on it, but they really do say to Emma, like, you, that would never happen. Like, that would never work, what you're proposing. And you've risked her future. Like, she had a chance of a good future.
Yeah.
That worked, that would make her happy and be secure. And, like, you've stepped in and screwed this up. I do remember the say in Pride and Prejudice, where her friend who marries Mr. Collins, she says, like, oh, he's got so much to do in the garden, and I tell him to do stuff in the garden. And I also tell him to call on Lady What's-Her-Face about, you know, sometimes he has to do it twice a week, twice a day. And those sermons he has to write, honestly, they take ages. I only see him, you know, half an hour at dinner. And it's a strange, like, what you have to do to make a life.
Have we all heard the headcanon, the academic theory, that Charlotte Lucas is a lesbian?
Ooh. I don't think I have, but that is really interesting.
Who's a lesbian?
Charlotte Lucas is Lizzie's best friend in Pride and Prejudice. Mr. Collins, her awful cousin, proposes to her and she says no.
Mm.
And he then proposes to Charlotte Lucas, who says yes. Who's in a very similar financial situation to Lizzie. So she basically married him, even though she knows he's ridiculous and ugh, but she's going to have a stable home to live in. And then when Lizzie goes to visit her, Charlotte Lucas is perfectly, like, seems genuinely perfectly content, but is very much like Lydia said, like, yeah, I mean, he's out in the garden and he's going to call on Lady Catherine and we only see each other very little. And that's why she's happy.
Mm.
And there is a theory that she is intended to be a lesbian. Mm. And there is a theory that she is not intended to be a lesbian, but that you can read her as one anyway.
Yeah. Also.
Which I really like.
Yeah.
Do you think that Jane Austen knew about lesbians?
There's also a big theory that she was bisexual. Yes, I think she did know about that.
I mean, she does talk well about the ladies being pretty. She appreciates a pretty lady.
I mean, have you heard her description of Harriet Smith? It's intense. Emma is in raptures over her eyes all the time. That book is gay.
And in the 2019 Emma, like, they really make a lot of, like, the really close female friendship between them, and I really like that, and I was just like, this is quite gay. I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Helen doesn't have anything to say. Helen's imagination has taken over.
I'm just thinking about lesbian Jane Austen. I'm sorry. And I'm just thinking about, like, queer readings of all the texts.
Well, they're there. They're definitely there.
Yeah. Aww. That would be so nice. I don't know what this era, a Regency?
Mm-hmm.
Regency lesbians. I think that's great. I would like more of those. I'd like more gayness all around everyone.
Pride and Prejudice and gayness. Yeah.
Sense and Sensibility and Sapphism.
Yes.
Yay!
Emma is a lesbian.
Okay, that's good. Are you a friend of Emma? Okay, all right. I'm looking at the questions that I want to ask. But I feel like they're all much less interesting than what we've already talked about without like any guidance from me.
That's cool.
What are your questions, Helen?
I think the one I most want to ask is, like, which relationship do we like the best?
Mm. Oh, that's a really good question. That's a good question.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of relationships in the books where the man is like, I need to scold you because you've been naughty. And it's a bit like, because Mr. Tilney is like, oh, you're too silly reading your gothic books. And
Mr. Knightley is,
you should be nicer to your friends. But
okay, Mr. Knightley, yes, very much. Also, Edmund Bertram. You can't see me. I'm just doing if you're listening to a podcast, you can't see that I'm just doing big thumbs down there. But no, Henry Tilney is joking. He's saying those things super ironically because that was the dominant cultural narrative at the time. And he's like poking fun at it. He's being sarcastic.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, I've only really seen the 80s adaptation, which has weird saxophones in it, which is hilarious.
Oh my god! Yes! Catherine Schlesinger and Peter Firth! Oh my god! Oh, yes, okay. That's maybe the worst thing ever filmed. I love it. So I, on my Twitch channel, I wrote, I read Northanger Abbey as a bedtime story over several weeks to people, and they watched it. And then at the end, we watched one of my favourite Jane Austen adaptations, which is the 2007 Northanger Abbey with Felicity Jones and J.J. Fields, and then immediately followed it with the 1987 Northanger Abbey. It's awful. It's the worst thing in the world. Isn't it dreadful? Doesn't he look at her like he wants to eat her skin?
Yeah, I think I watched it when I was a kid with my grandma, so I really can't remember it that well. And I have read the book more recently, but still quite a while ago. So it's all a bit fuzzy in my brain. But yeah, it is very bizarre.
It's bizarre.
I just genuinely want your recommendations of what the best adaptations are.
Well, it depends on what you want from a Jane Austen adaptation.
Comedy and hot men.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So define hot men.
Well, I mean, it's a very varied palette. But, you know, they're hot. And they're usually men.
Okay.
But not always.
Hot men. Yeah. So, this is a good time for me to plug my podcast, actually.
Yes.
I have a podcast where I watch and review every Jane Austen adaptation ever filmed with Jessica Law, who plays Nicola in the Magnus Archives. And she has never read a Jane Austen novel before and will be watching each adaptation completely fresh, so that's very exciting. And we do a review system where we score adaptations based on five main criteria, which we think are important to a Jane Austen adaptation, which is so first of all, there's like Austen Leigh vibes, how Austen Leigh does it feel, and then there's how funny are the side characters, how much fun it is, how likable is the leading lady, and how sexy is the leading man.
Cool.
So yeah, it's a good one to watch if you want something funny and with sexy men. Sorry, it's a good one to listen to.
Yeah.
But I think, so for Northanger Abbey, the 2007 adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, the 2007 adaptation of Northanger Abbey is the really good one. J.J. Fields is not what I would call a traditionally, like, sexy man, but I think he does very well in the role of Captain Tilney. Sorry, Frederick Tilney. Henry Tilney. Good Lord, Captain Frederick Tilney is someone else.
One of the things that Austen makes very clear, especially, say, in Persuasion, where they talk about how hot her cousin is all the time, is that dudes can be, like, they can look traditionally hot and they can seem cool, but they're
not be hot.
They're not. Yeah. They're creepy. Mm. Whereas,
there's
like,
so many bad boys. Yeah.
There's so many bad boys.
Yeah.
Wickham.
So this is going to be my next one. If you want to look at sexy people, and you're not that fussed about the rest of the quality of the adaptation, then Billy Piper's Mansfield Park is a good one to go for, because I don't remember the name of the guy who plays Henry Crawford, but Hayley Atwell plays Mary Crawford, and obviously the Crawford siblings are the sexiest of all the Jane Austen characters, I would say.
That's the adaptation that I can't get through at all.
Yeah, it's absolutely
crap. And I can't remember why.
Just because it's crap.
Real bad.
Just wading through wet sand.
Trying to reach the Darcy at the end, but you cannot make it.
Yeah. I think the only version of Mansfield Park I've actually consumed is a BBC radio adaptation, and I still really can't remember what happened in it. And I'm just like, no, it's just, I think I've probably ejected it from my brain for good reason.
Yeah, maybe this thing. I haven't read Mansfield Park, so I can't comment.
Yeah, it's the one where, like, among people who are very into Jane Austen, a lot of the time we just kind of put it in a corner. Mm. Like, some people absolutely love it, but there's definitely, like, it's one where more people just are like, oh, except Mansfield Park, I guess. Like, it's the weird one. Like, in the Jane Austen book club, there's this, I think it's a book and then a film, and there's a line about Mansfield Park where they're like, and we'll read all six of her novels, and we're like, even Mansfield Park? Yes, even Mansfield Park. Like, yeah. Just like,
yeah,
it's a bit of a slog. We never said which was our favourite relationship.
Oh, yeah.
No, you never did. We got sidetracked.
Mm.
All right, hit me with them, quick.
I'm trying desperately to not think of the couples and to, like, be cool and think of a female friendship that's much better. But so many of the female friendships are also kind of complicated and messy in interesting ways, which I think is realistic and I love. But, like, I hate Jane. I just can't stand it. You know, there's others. But, yeah, I... Anne and Wentworth. Anne and Fred. Yeah. They're just... Because I got a bias
Anne and Wentworth
that way.
Is a good
they're one. Just, he actually really respects and knows her. Like, he knows her. And she knows him.
Yeah. Yeah,
I have to agree. I think that was the one that I was going to go for as well. And I think also there is an element of just talk to each other, just communicate. You both like each other, just talk. But then there's also an element of the tension.
But they're
is
not
so
allowed.
It is.
Slow burn.
Is. Friends to enemies to friends. 3,000 K. Yeah.
I know. I brought this up, but I now will refuse to choose.
What's your favourite female relationship? Because I bet you can think of one.
I mean, I love Emma and Harriet because it is such a messy drama. Like, it's just a mess. It's just a mess. I love that. That's really good. I think maybe Eleanor and Marianne have I think that they are basically each other's world when they move, you know, and they are so different. And they have so many points of tension in a way that I think is really realistic for a sibling relationship. But also they are 100% each other's best friend. And I think when Marianne falls ill, Eleanor is just devastated. And I don't remember if it's in the original book, but in the Emma Thompson adaptation, she has this line that's like, don't leave me all alone. And it's just,
yes, you're right.
God. Oh, yeah, maybe that one.
I'm annoyed now because that's what I was going to pick, but I couldn't remember Eleanor's name. I was like, Marianne and what was her name? I was for some reason, I was thinking Lydia. And I was like, no, Lydia is the weird one in the other one.
What I like is the difference, actually, between this and, say, Lord of the Rings, where if I got, like, a word wrong, like, when I was like, oh, it's the last friendly house. And you're like, it's the last homely house. Like, it'd come in and like correct. No, it was cool because it was just like, whoa, Helen's encyclopedic in that kind of, there's loads of things I kind of know. I keep the connections, but I don't keep the specifics. I'm really terrible at that. I'm a bad researcher like that. I have to write everything down. Nothing stays in my head. But like, so when people know stuff, when they can just like encyclopedically pick out the index thing, I'm just like, I'm in awe. And the way that you did that over the Lord of the Rings, and I love how you clearly cared just as much about all the worlds of Jane Austen, but you're like, my favourite one, I think her name might be Bob.
Yeah. I can't remember anyone's name at all in Jane Austen.
To be fair, they've all got the same name.
Yeah.
She reuses names so often. How many Henrys do there need to be?
Basically, if you're not named after a monarch, you're not real.
Ugh. I think, though, that is all we have time for, which is very sad because I want to keep talking. I mean, I say this every episode, like, no, I want to keep talking. I think what I'm learning from this is that we need enthusiasm episodes to be 2 hours long, at least. But we'll see if I can wangle that or not.
Yeah, I can imagine the collective editing. Yeah.
Anyway, with that, thank you very, very much for listening. I hope that you've enjoyed it as much as we have. It's been very, very nice. But for now and until next time, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye. And it's goodbye from them.
Bye. Goodbye.
Enthusiasm is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. It is created and hosted by Helen Gould, produced by April Sumner, and edited by Marissa Ewing. Thanks for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. It's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woebegone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woebegone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woebegone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woebegone, spelled woe period begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun, and see you later.